Chapter 24. They were interrupted at that moment by the arrival of Sir Nugent, an expression of settled gloom on his countenance.
"Have you told Ianthe that I am here?" at once demanded Sylvester.
"Good God, no. I wouldn't tell her for the world. She would be cast down by the very sight of you," replied Sir Nugent, shocked.
"Understand me, Fotherby," said Sylvester, with considerable asperity. "Neither you nor Ianthe has the power to prevent my removing Edmund. Well, though I am going to do so, I have enough respect for her sensibility as to wish not only to inform her of my intention, but to assure her that every care shall be taken of the boy. Now, perhaps you will either conduct me to Ianthe, or go to tell her yourself that I am taking Edmund home, tomorrow." Moments later, Sylvester was knocking on Ianthe's door, followed closely by Sir Nugent. When he entered the room hard upon his knock, Ianthe fell back upon her pillows with a shriek. She then burst into tears. This outbreak of lamentation brought Phoebe into the room to beg her to restrain herself for Edmund's sake.
"I am persuaded you cannot wish to distress him," she said. "Only think how disturbing for such a little boy to hear his mamma crying."
"You are as heartless as Sylvester," wept Ianthe. "None of you cares for my sufferings."
"Not I, certainly," said Sylvester. "You see, I am quite honest with you, Ianthe. Now listen to what I have to say to you. It has pleased you to remember for 4 years a foolish thing I once said to you. You have cast it in my teeth so often that you have come to believe I meant it. No, don't turn away your head. Look me in the face and answer me. Do you think that I could treat with unkindness all that I have left to me of Harry?" she said sulkily, picking up her handkerchief.
"I am sure I never thought you cared so very much for Harry. You didn't shed a tear when he died."
She stopped, frightened by the expression on his face. It was a moment before he spoke. Watching him, Phoebe saw that he was very pale, his satyr look pronounced, his lips tightly compressed. When he unclosed them, it was to say in a curt voice, "When Harry died, I lost a part of myself. We will not discuss that. I have only this to add. You are Edmund's mother, and you may visit him whenever you choose to do so. I have told you so many times already, but I'll repeat it. Come to chance when you please, with or without your husband." As the door shut behind Sylvester, Ianthe dissolved again into tears, but showed signs of recovering her spirits when Phoebe assured her she would take every care of Edmund upon the journey back to London.
"Oh dear, Miss Marlowe, were it not for your going, I could not consent to his being taken from me,"
Ianthe said, clasping Phoebe's hand.
"And if anyone is so unjust as to say that I deserted my child, you know it is untrue."
"If anyone should say such a thing to me, I shall reply that he was torn from your arms," promised Phoebe. "Excuse me, I must go back to him and blow out his candle."
But when she reached the bedchamber she shared with Edmund, she checked on the threshold, for Sylvester was sitting on the edge of Edmund's crib. He got up at once, saying with some constraint,
"I beg your pardon, I should not be here, but Edmund called to me."
"Of course, it is of no consequence," she said, in a more friendly tone than she had yet used to him.
Sylvester ruffled Edmund's curls.
"Good night, vile brat."
"You won't go away?"
Edmund said, assailed by a sudden fear.
"Not without you."
"And Phoebe? And Tom?"
"Yes, they will both come with us."
"Good," said Edmund. "I dare say we shall be as merry as Griggs."